Monday morning you sure look fine. Good morning, NFL fans. Welcome to another episode of Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. A Pro Bowl episode, actually, of Monday Morning Huddle, I guess you could call it. We're not going to dedicate much of the show to the Pro Bowl, but we will get to that in our second segment. We have a lot of stuff to discuss in the fourth and long segment. Some interesting topics with possibly taking out extra points in the NFL. And a couple of different writers on the site, Football Nation, writing actually the same article, ranking the worst five Super Bowl teams of all time. So I'm going to weigh in on both articles. I encourage you to go check out both of them and read them. And I'm actually going to give my list of the five worst Super Bowl teams, in my opinion. And we'll get to a couple other topics in the fourth and long segment as well. Part of our show going out to previewing the award ceremony that's coming up in New York this weekend. I'm going to give my predictions of or who I think should win. But starting off the show tonight, we have another interview with Cooper Allen, Football Nation reporter. He's been a loyal guest star of the show. He's been on, I believe, three or four, actually maybe even five times this season. This might be his fifth appearance. He was on it twice last year as well, so by far leading the show in guest appearances. So let's get right to it. Cooper and I dissected the Super Bowl matchup, talking about the big points and major topics of discussion that really what I think should be major topics of discussion, not whether or not how many times Peyton Manning is going to say Omaha in the Super Bowl or whether or not Richard Sherman is a thug or not, which, by the way, I might retract some of what I said last week. Kind of said it in the moment, just like Richard Sherman did, right? I didn't get a lot of time to digest what he said. I only got maybe 12 hours, and with all of the fallout of that, maybe I think I was a little critical on the guy last week. Though, I stand by that he probably should not have done that. But anyway, rather than talking about Richard Sherman and Peyton Manning's Omaha, Cooper and Allen and I got to what I think really matters about this Super Bowl coming up, Super Bowl 48 between the Broncos and Seahawks. Hello, we're welcoming in Football Nation reporter Cooper Allen. He's been a guest star, three or four times this year. We're really excited to have you back again, Cooper. So for today's little discussion with Cooper, I have seven burning questions for you, Cooper, and all of it having to do with the Super Bowl. You know, the Broncos making their seventh Super Bowl appearance, John Elway number seven, and for the Seahawks, Tavarius Jackson number seven. So I thought it was a fitting number of questions.
Yeah, definitely a very suiting number.
All right, so the question that's kind of burning on everybody's mind here, because the Super Bowl is in New Jersey at MetLife Stadium, how will the weather affect this game?
This has been a topic it's really bugged me since they first announced that the game would be played. In my opinion, no championship game should ever be decided by an outside force, whether it be officiating or, in this case, the weather. It's one thing for a team to have to adapt to something like a player injury, but adapting the weather isn't fair for anyone that's really involved in the game. How will it affect the Super Bowl? Manning's struggles in cold weather games, in my opinion, they may be a little bit overstated. Mm-hmm. He's still a good quarterback. There's a bit of a drop-off between his play in regular conditions, but he's still capable of throwing a few touchdown passes. With that being said, I think the poor conditions will give Seattle an advantage. They have the better running back and the better defense, which are two things you need to win a football game in a game with snow or rain.
You said it perfectly that it is a little bit overplayed the way Peyton Manning plays in the cold weather. He doesn't turn into a terrible quarterback, but there is a difference. So I liked the way you put that.
exactly.
So, and I would agree that the Seahawks, with their defense and running game, would have the advantage in a cold weather game and in the snow, which is, it's definitely going to be cold and possibly will be snowing. So let's start with that matchup with the Seahawks defense against the Broncos offense, kind of what everyone's waiting to see. And one thing that I think will be the key to the game, Cooper, is the physicality of the Seahawks defensive backs. They're the most physical players in the league, most physical secondary, most physical defense. And if they're going to win this game, in my opinion, they're going to have to kind of rough up the wide receivers, Demaryius Thomas, Wes Welker, and Eric Decker. Do you think they'll be able to do that?
It'll be very interesting to see how much they can get away with. All season long, like you said, they've been a very physical team. They may get away with a little bit more than most teams. Mm-hmm. And going up against a team like Denver with such great receivers, it'll be interesting to see what's called versus what's not.
Even if they get away with some calls during the season, they still were the most penalized team in the league. That was a fact that I didn't realize until watching the NFC Championship game.
Yeah, they definitely take their chances in the secondary. And we see it's paid off to this point, even though they are the most penalized team. The chances they take usually result in turnovers.
True. Very true, and they get a lot of payoff with big plays, like you said, and kind of big risk, big reward, I guess you could say, with their defense. Occasionally, yeah, they're going to get called for some pass interference or maybe holding or illegal contact.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting strategy that seemed to pay off for them. Like you said, high risk, high reward, and I'd take an interception at the end of a drive if there's two or three holding penalties. If they're getting an interception at the end of it, then why not, right?
True, true. That it kind of negates the penalties. So, looking at the Seahawks defense as a whole, they're number one in the league at stopping the run. But the Broncos, I think, were never really given enough credit with how effective they were in the running game this year. No, Sean Moreno had a 1,000-yard rushing year. He had over 10 rushing touchdowns. What kind of role do you see him playing in this game? Is it something very important for the Broncos to establish a running game, or do you see him maybe more involved in the passing type scenario?
The running game will definitely play a role for the Broncos in this game. They can't afford to become one-dimensional, or else the pass rush will eventually start getting the manic. And to see what Moreno's role would be, I go back to when the Arizona Cardinals played the Seahawks in Seattle. They beat them 17-10 in that game, and Andre Ellington had 17 touches for 72 yards. Obviously, Peyton Manning's a better quarterback than Carson Palmer, and the Broncos will throw more. But I see Moreno having a similar role to that of Andre Ellington.
Interesting.
Denver should mix in some runs for him off tackle, some drop plays, and maybe even a couple of screen passes out of the backfield.
Yeah, that's interesting. As dominant as the Seahawks defense has been, there have been games where teams have been able to run the ball against them.
Yeah, for sure. I think it really all comes down to game planning. And they're just going to be one step ahead of their defense, which, I mean, it's tough to do considering all the talent they have. But there are some players and there are some plays where you can get 4, 5, 6 yards against them. If you consider that a success.
And it does seem like the Seahawks running D is a lot better at home as well, and this is a neutral game, so who knows how that will play into it. But on the road, giving up more yards, I would say, on average. I remember the Monday night game against the Rams where they gave up a bunch of rushing yards to St. Louis, and even at home on a couple occasions, like you said, Andre Ellington getting it done on the ground against the Seahawks.
Yeah, exactly. It'll definitely be interesting to see if the Broncos can have success on the ground, and Moreno could end up being one of the deciding factors.
Someone else who could be a defining factor for the Broncos in their offense, tight end Julius Thomas. He's had an exceptional year, had over 1,000 yards receiving. Where do you see him in this game, and who covers him ultimately for the Seahawks? Do they put a safety on him like Earl Thomas, a Defensive Player of the Year candidate, or do you see one of the linebackers trying to cover him, or is it a mix-and-match type scenario?
Definitely be interesting to see who they put up against Thomas. He's one of the new breed of tight ends, the big, strong, fast, athletic tight end that's too fast for linebackers to cover, but too big for defensive backs to cover. And Seattle's had some success covering guys like that because of how big their secondary is. You look at guys like Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, guys like these are all big guys. So Earl Thomas, I think you put Earl Thomas on someone like Wes Welker. Earl Thomas is only 5'10". And I think you go with a guy like Cam Chancellor, who's 6'3", to go on the 6'5" Julius Thomas.
Good point. Yeah, the size could definitely play a part in that decision.
Yeah, for sure. Earl Thomas is definitely a great safety, and he'd probably be very capable of covering Julius Thomas. But there could be a play or two where they need that extra height advantage, and Chancellor's a great safety as well.
So flipping over to the other side of the ball for each team, which not many people have really been discussing, the Seahawks offense, and when it's been discussed, I would say people have still been questioning whether they can get the job done, whether Russell Wilson can win the big game, and so far he's proven he can. Does Seattle have to open it up on offense a little bit in this game? And if they do, do they have enough weapons to keep up with Denver and Peyton Manning? And kind of what I'm asking here is, yes, the Seahawks would like to score some points, but if they run the risk of making this an offensive game, is that a match and a type of game that they cannot win against the Broncos?
I think that they may have enough weapons on offense to keep up for a while. I think it'll come down to turnovers, if they can avoid the fumbles, the interception. But there isn't really a reason that the offense can't keep up. Russell Wilson can get it done both through the air and on the ground. Marshawn Lynch can contribute in the run and the pass game. And Percy Harvin's been cleared to play, which is huge for them if he can make it through the game.
Yeah, that is huge. I had not heard that yet.
Yeah, he should definitely have an impact if he can stay healthy.
So he's definitely been cleared for the game?
Yeah, I just looked that up earlier. I think this was a couple hours ago they talked about it.
Okay. Very good. Yeah, that is a big could play a huge role in the game.
Yeah, definitely. He's the kind of guy that, despite his injury troubles and despite him not playing much, Seattle did give up a first round pick for him for a reason. And he's a game changer. He can make big plays both in the backfield and in the receiving game.
Now, somebody on the Seahawks offense that no one has really been doubting all year, Marshawn Lynch, has been fantastic the last few seasons. But my question here is, the Broncos have actually been pretty decent at stopping the run. They're in the top 10. They were ranked 8th this season in rushing yards allowed. So my question to you, and kind of an observation by me here, it seems like the offensive strengths for both teams kind of play right into what the other teams want to stop on defense. Seattle wanting to stop the passing game with that Legion of Boom secondary and Peyton Manning wanting to throw the ball. Well, for Seattle, they want to run it, but Denver, as awful as their defense has been, they've been able to stop the run pretty effectively.
That's what's so great about the Super Bowl matchup is there's so many great individual matchups throughout the game to watch. And in years past or in games prior, earlier in the year, you'd look at one or two matchups per game. And in this one, it's offense versus defense, then a certain corner versus a certain receiver, or a certain linebacker versus a certain tight end, or a certain running back versus in the entire defense, a certain O line against a certain D line. And there's so many different matchups to pick and choose from. So it should be fun to watch.
Yeah, definitely. Well, what matchups are you looking for on special teams? I mean, both teams have kind of, not even kind of, they've had exceptional special teams play with Holiday, return man for the Broncos. He's had a good two seasons or a season and a half with them. And the Seahawks give up very few receiving punt return yards and return yards. So, and both kickers have had exceptional years as well. Does anybody in particular have the advantage on special teams?
I think I give a slight advantage to Denver. Okay. Matt Prater, in my opinion, is the best kicker in the game. He's 14 of 15 on field goals of over 40 yards. His only miss came from outside of 50 yards on the year. He's pretty much money from anything inside of 50. And when you're looking at that, it could come down to a missed field goal or a made field goal. Prater can nail a 60-yarder like he did earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm.
Then that could be a huge game changer.
True. So, I'm going to put you on the spot here, Cooper, but who you got in this game?
I think it'll be a pretty close matchup, but in the end, I'm going to roll with Denver here. I think their offense is just too much for Seattle's defense, and as good as that Seahawks defense is, there's too many weapons for the Broncos.
Now, as your fandom for the Arizona Cardinals influenced your choice at all?
It could have a little bit to do with that. Maybe I'm overlooking Seattle a little bit, but at the same time, it's hard to go against Peyton Manning and
yes.
Guys like Wes Welker, Demaryius Thomas, especially after what they've been able to do this year.
I was just teasing you. I don't think that you can be completely objective. Your choice is completely fine. So I got one other question for you. It's burning on my mind. Did you watch the Pro Bowl?
Flipping back and forth between that and the Grammys. I mean, I was really only not paying attention to either of them. But the Pro Bowl definitely was a bit better than it had been in years past. The intensity was up a little bit.
Okay.
But, I mean, at the end of the day, it's still
the Pro Bowl.
Nothing super exciting.
So, did you like the new format?
It was interesting. I don't think it's something they should do every year, but to have it every once in a while would be kind of cool. Seeing a guy like Mike Tolbert truck his own teammate and Luke Kuechly, I mean, stuff like little things like that were kind of cool to see.
Well, that about wraps it up. Cooper Allen, Football Nation reporter. He writes great stuff. Cooper, do you have any projects in the making coming out, you know, during Super Bowl week?
There's one actually that is coming out today. It is the top 10 worst NFL contracts heading into 2014. And then throughout the week, I'm doing a piece on the MVP for each individual NFL team. So stay tuned for those ones. I hope you guys enjoy those.
Oh, yeah, we definitely will. I really believe you're one of the top writers on the site.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for coming on the show, Cooper. We hope to have you back again soon.
Yeah, thanks again, Dave. Really appreciate it.
Once again, that was Cooper Allen, Football Nation reporter, writer on the site. And I wasn't sucking up to him. I really do believe he is one of the best that Football Nation has to offer. So I really encourage all of our listeners out there to go check out what Cooper has to say in all of his articles. And again, Cooper, thanks for coming on the show. We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we will get into NFL awards. Welcome back to Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. Let's get into our little award ceremony. We had the Grammys on Sunday night, as Cooper alluded to. I didn't watch it, but I'm sure other people did. So let's have a little bit of an award ceremony here on the show. We're going to have different categories. Obviously, I think everybody knows what the categories are. And actually, if you are a real follower of my work and Cooper Allen's work, or either of our work, we combined up our series First and Ten, which we did throughout the season in the fall. Our last edition of First and Ten, coming out at the end of December, we both picked a person for each award. So I'm going back and going to reference this article that I encourage everyone to go read, even though it is almost a month old now, it's still relevant. So I'm going to go back and reference who I picked for each award, and actually I'm going to say whether or not I've changed my mind in the last month or not. So let's start off with the Rookie of the Years. Offensive Rookie of the Year. The end of December, I said Keenan Allen. I'm staying with Keenan Allen. I think he had a tremendous season. He hit a little bit of a wall there in the middle of the year, but then he came back and finished real strong and actually had over 1,000 yards, and even in the playoffs had an impact, catching 2 touchdowns against the Denver Broncos, which he also did in the regular season. So it seemed like towards the end of the year, I don't have his stats in front of me, but just based on what I remember from what I saw, he was catching a lot more touchdowns than getting the yards. Early on in the season, he was going for 80, 100, 120 yards, and maybe 1 touchdown, maybe not a touchdown. Well, late in the year, he was getting those red zone targets and end zone targets, and he was converting. He was catching a lot of touchdowns from Phillip Rivers, who, by the way, had a big back, big bounce back season. And without Keenan Allen, I don't think Phillip Rivers is anywhere close to playing at the Pro Bowl level, which he did this year. So a lot of that had to do with Keenan Allen, and I would pick him as Offensive Rookie of the Year. Defensive Rookie of the Year, it's a little bit more difficult. I mean, it's tough to find a defensive rookie that really makes an impact that you can remember. But there were a few this year. I thought about picking Kenny Vaccaro, who started at safety for the New Orleans Saints. The Saints having a big back, bounce back season on defense, with a huge part of that was Rob Ryan hired as the defensive coordinator. But Vaccaro put in, was an instant impact as a rookie at the safety position. But I'm going with Sheldon Richardson, the defensive lineman for the Jets, that I believe they actually got some flack for making this pick, at least taking him along with their other pick at the cornerback position in the first round. D. Milner, I mean, he was picked to replace Darrelle Revis, so we'll see if that actually ends up happening, if he can play at that same level. But Richardson is the real deal. He is the new nose tackle guy that plugs the run. He fits perfectly into Rex Ryan's system. He's going to be a beast for years to come. I mean, it's too bad that the Jets can't seem to get a lot on offense and can't seem to land a consistent quarterback. But Richardson had 3.5 sacks in the season. And again, I think he was a big part of the Jets reasserting themselves as a top 10 defense, which they really have been since Ryan has been there. But I think fans walked away from Jets games, if they weren't talking about how much Geno Smith was struggling, they walked away saying, man, they have a really good defensive line, and Richardson was a big part of that this year. Coach of the Year now. This is a tough one. There's a lot of coaches out there. When at first you kind of think, oh, there's not really that many. I mean, Ron Rivera, right? And then you think, oh, well, Chip Kelly is a good candidate. Andy Reid is an excellent candidate. And, you know, I hate that you only get to pick a coach that overachieves or was a brand new coach with a new team and did well. Those are the only coaches that win Coach of the Year. Bill Belichick actually won it in 2007. It wasn't a new team, but they went undefeated. So it's either a coach with a new team, a coach that overachieves, or a coach that goes undefeated, which never happens. It happens twice in the Super Bowl era. So I think Bill Belichick should be up there. I mean, they overachieved. Come on. Taking that team to the AFC Championship game And I know that they got smashed around in that game, but when you really look at it, even though it was a weak AFC and a weak AFC East, that team really didn't have any business being in the Final Four of the NFL this year. But with Tom Brady, with Bill Belichick, they go farther every year than they should. So I think he's got to be in the discussion. I think a coach like Mike Tomlin should be in the discussion. Most teams that start the season 0-4 and then fall to 2-6 don't go back into playoff contention. And if it wasn't for a blown call in the last week of the season, the Steelers are in the playoffs. I don't think either of those guys should win the award, but they should be in the conversation. I think it's going to come between Ron Rivera, Chip Kelly, and Andy Reid. And I would pick Ron Rivera. I know if you go back to my article with Cooper Allen, I picked Chip Kelly. I was kind of playing devil's advocate because he picked Ron Rivera. I honestly think Ron Rivera should be the coach of the year. I mean, 12-4, that team's defense was outstanding. He's a defensive coach. He had a big responsibility with that. He also, I think, has to be credited with the maturity of Cam Newton. I mean, credit Cam Newton with that as well. But Ron Rivera, his coach, I think, had a big part of that this season. And another name that I should mention, Bruce Arians. I mean, the award very rarely, I don't think it ever has, gone to the same coach 2 years in a row. I mean, very rarely does a coach win it twice. So I seriously doubt that Bruce Arians would win it, but he's with a new team, and he took them to a 10-6 record, just missing the playoffs. He's got to be in the conversation. I mean, he fits the billing. A coach that does well with more than what he has with a new team. That's exactly what he did. So, but the fact that he won it last year, and he wasn't even a head coach, he won it as interim head coach. Outstanding couple of years for Bruce Arians. Congratulations to him, even if he doesn't win the award. I probably wouldn't give it to him. But again, I think I wouldn't give it to him just because he won it last year, which is kind of a shame. If he's deserving of it, you should vote for him. But if I had a vote, I probably would vote for Ron Rivera. Here we go now with the more, I don't want to say more interesting awards, but the big boy awards, you could say. Defensive Player of the Year now. I'm going with Luke Kuechly. I said him a month ago, and I'm going to stick with him. There's a lot of great candidates out there. It's another award that you don't think there's a ton out there. And then when you really think about it, you sit down and think about all of the great defensive playmakers this season. Robert Mathis, Robert Quinn even on the Rams. Luke Kuechly. You got a couple Seahawks that you could put in there. Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas. That's five guys right there off the top of my head. And Navarro Bowman should probably be in there. You could even throw in probably another 49er or two. It's going to be an interesting race to see who ends up winning this award. And Cooper Allen staying true to the Cardinals. Sorry, Cooper. I'm rubbing it in a little bit, teasing you again. He picked Carlos Dansby. So he didn't pick any of the players that I'm putting in as nominations. But I would go with the linebacker from the Panthers. In the games that I saw him play, the Carolina games that I saw Carolina, I'd say, maybe three or four times. He was outstanding, just magnificent. He's all over the field. He just, again, in that Saints game, what, he had 24 tackles? That's ridiculous. 24 tackles, and he had an interception in that game. So it's just unbelievable, and he was a big part of, actually, I would even say he was the reason why Carolina became a top three defense in the league this year, arguably the best defense, although I would definitely say Seattle had the best defense. So I would put Carolina in the top three defenses this year, and with that linebacker from Boston College being the main reason why they had such a resurgence on defense. And again, probably the other reason, Ron Rivera, who would be my offense would be my coach of the year. I'm thinking offense a little too soon because that's our next category. Offensive player of the year. Come on. He's also my MVP pick, Peyton Manning. He just, magnificent season. Probably won't ever get repeated. Of course, we said that about Tom Brady about 6 years ago. So it probably will get broken at some point, but 5,400 passing yards, 55 touchdowns. He was only sacked 18 times. That's a stat that doesn't get thrown out there very much. So he had tremendous line play, but Manning continues to get rid of the ball faster than anybody else in the league. Makes up for maybe what little arm strength that he's lost, and I'm saying little arm strength he's lost, not little that he has left. He's lost just a little bit. He's almost at the top of his game when he was 27, 28 years old, where he's now 37 years old. I think there's a lot of great choices. Again, at Offensive Player of the Year, Jamaal Charles had a big season, kind of a bounce-back year for him. LeSean McCoy had a bounce-back year with Chip Kelly, Coach of the Year candidate as well. So a lot of players that you can choose from, but I think you have to go with Peyton Manning with at least one of the awards. I think if you go with Peyton Manning for MVP and you choose LeSean McCoy or Jamaal Charles for Offensive Player of the Year, that's fine. I'm all right with that. Peyton Manning has to win one of them. I think he has to win the MVP. I look really hard to give it to somebody else because Peyton Manning has won so many MVP awards. It would be nice to give it to someone else, but look at those stats. Look at the Broncos' record. They're in the Super Bowl. It's hard to argue that there wasn't a more valuable player this year than Peyton Manning. So I kind of grouped Offensive Player of the Year and MVP together, but that wraps up our awards ceremony here on Monday Morning Huddle. Now to the Pro Bowl. So from one high to a low, you know what? We make fun of the Pro Bowl. It was a really good game. Not even a decent game. This was a very good game. And it's too bad that most of my listeners here probably didn't watch it. Probably watching the Grammys or even something else. Not the Grammys or the Pro Bowl. Just in general, just stayed away from the Pro Bowl. I know even loyal, very loyal football fans such as Bill Enright on the Football Nation site tweeted out that he watched it for 5 minutes and turned it off. Well, for all of you, including you, Bill, you missed a good game. And it was entertaining. It was sloppy, all right? It was very sloppy. There were a lot of turnovers. So if you're an offensive fan, it wasn't a game for you. Even if you were a defensive fan, it wasn't like the defense was fantastic. It was just it was kind of rainy in Hawaii, and quarterbacks and running backs were kind of coughing up the ball, just dropping it, being careless with the ball, with interceptions. Every quarterback threw an interception except Nick Foles, which makes sense because he didn't really throw any interceptions during the year either. But all the other five quarterbacks threw an interception. That's kind of amazing. And I don't want to go into too great of detail in analyzing the Pro Bowl. That's a little ridiculous. But I will say the energy level was much higher for this game. And now I don't know if that had to do with the competitiveness of Deion Sanders and Jerry Rice or if it was the competitiveness with teammates versus teammates because you had guys like Derek Johnson hitting Jamaal Charles, which was a really exciting play. You had that Browns cornerback flip over the star receiver from Cleveland, Josh Gordon, the cornerback TJ Ward. And then you had the collision between Mike Tolbert and my defensive player of the year, Luke Kuechly. So a really entertaining game from that. I mean, I don't know if it was that or if it was Sanders versus Rice or if it was just the players wanted to play this year. And one of the biggest differences that set the tone for the whole game, and Chris Collinsworth pointed it out, was the pass rush was on. If there is a pass rush in the Pro Bowl, everybody else has to play. Because if there's a pass, if the defensive ends and the defensive tackles are rushing the passer, the offensive line has to block. And if they don't block, the quarterback gets lit up. And if the quarterback has to scramble away, or if the quarterback has to deal with an offensive line that's not blocking, then he's going to try so he doesn't get hurt. And it just elevates everyone's play if you can establish a pass rush. If guys like J.J. Watt, Robert Quinn, Ndamukong Suh, those guys, if they can play hard, they set the tone for the entire game. And another big difference is they were letting them play. They put back in that you could play bump and run coverage. You didn't have to let let up, and it just created a very competitive atmosphere. It wasn't too much. It wasn't over the top. When the quarterbacks were sacked, they were put down lightly. There was some hitting. I mean, no, there was some hitting of quarterbacks. There was hitting throughout the game. It wasn't like completely not trying. It was a good game, and I would say a very good Pro Bowl. As good as a Pro Bowl was going to get, to be honest. And I wasn't a huge fan of the new format with doing the draft, but if that means that the game is competitive, that the game is like this and close and decided by 1 point with a 2-point conversion at the end, kind of exciting, then keep this format. It created a very good game. I'd be curious to see if they would pick other Hall of Fame players. Do they have to stay with Sanders and Rice every year? And then that's kind of interesting, because then now Rice can come in next year and say that, you know, he's 1-0 against Sanders, and then they pick completely new teams next year again, and maybe we can the two, you know, Sanders and Rice can franchise tag one of the players that they can keep as long as that player keeps making the Pro Bowl. Maybe every year Jerry Rice can have Drew Brees. There's a lot of possibilities there. And anyway, I think we've dissected the Pro Bowl enough, an exhibition game. But I just want to have my listeners know, even if you didn't watch the game, I think there is some hope for the Pro Bowl. I think they definitely saved the Pro Bowl. This is, to my knowledge, this is the best Pro Bowl that I've ever seen since following the NFL. So that, although that's not saying much, it's also very promising. All right, we're due for another break, but when we come back, we're going to go to our fourth and long segment. Back here on Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle with your host, Dave Holcomb. Now, I kind of misled you at the beginning of the show. We have two statements here in the fourth and long segment. We're keeping the show real brief today. But before we get to those two statements, I want to just call attention to this little fact here, okay? The NFL has been voted, for the 30th year in a row, the most popular sport in the United States. Now, I don't know the real specifics of this survey, but this survey is by the Harris Poll, and it asks adults ages 18 and over their favorite sport. And in 2014, early stages of this year, 35% of fans that voted in the survey called the NFL their favorite sport, which I kind of find funny that the NFL is their favorite sport. The NFL is a league. It's not a sport. But Major League Baseball was second with 14%. So baseball falling in at 14%. College football, I guess, is a separate sport than NFL. It's the same sport, guys. But according to this poll, college football came in third with 11%. Auto racing was fourth at 7%. NBA sixth. NBA was sixth. It was 6%. That's confusing. NHL seventh, 5%. College basketball is behind the NHL. That's a little misleading, because maybe college basketball isn't your favorite sport. College basketball isn't a sport. The sport is basketball. But you have to think that there are more college basketball fans than NHL fans. But anyway, that's according to this poll. I think the fact that there's such a big gap between all the other sports or all the other leagues and the NFL has got to say something, especially because 30 years ago, 29 years ago, the first year that the NFL beat the MLB for the most popular sport, 1985, the NFL had 24%, MLB had 23%. So it seems like every year there's been a trend, the NFL trending up, baseball and everything else trending down. Okay, now to our statements. At least the first one has to do with this. Really good article by a brand new, not brand new, but he only has maybe, I think, around 15 to 20 articles on the site so far. We hope he keeps writing because he's good. Travis Jawdon. Hope I'm saying your last name right, Travis. His article called "To Be or Not to Be: The Future of the Extra Point in the NFL." By the way, Travis, I like the Hamlet reference. I wonder if you even know "To Be or Not to Be" is from the play Hamlet. But anyway, Travis has a really good argument here debating whether or not the extra point is going to stay in the NFL. And Roger Goodell is seriously considering taking it out because it's not an exciting play. And rather than touchdowns being worth 6 points, touchdowns would be worth 7 points, and there would be an optional 1-point conversion that the teams could take from the 2-yard line. The attempt is not mandatory, it's optional. So I don't see why a team would want to go for the play for 1 point when Roger Goodell is basically saying that you can go for the play and get 1 point, and if you miss it, you only get 6 points, or you cannot go for the 1 point and just get a point anyway, and your touchdown 7 points. That's idiotic. What's even more asinine is the fact that he's thinking about taking out extra points. Okay, do I even need to say a statement here? Roger Goodell taking out the extra points is stupid. Of course it's stupid. Why would you want to take this out? You know, there's been quite a few comments left on Travis's article, and I hope he gets a lot more. I left a comment, and I think, to just sum it up, because I could talk about this for an hour, and I don't have that much time here on the show. Just to sum it up, Roger Goodell, if it ain't broken, don't fix it, man. There's nothing wrong with the extra point. I mean, it's converted, what, 98% of the time? But there is that one time where it's blocked or it hits the upright and it costs opponents and teams games and thus playoff berths. I know, I can't remember off the top of my head what team it was or what year, but I know a team missed a chance at going to the playoffs because they missed an extra point. It's happened. So as guaranteed as we want to make extra points to be out, they aren't. And they're as close to guaranteed as any play in the game, but there's still a need for them. I mean, it's like the penny. Is that a fair comparison? Maybe not. I just thought of it right now. Of course, it's worthless. It doesn't mean much. But when things are $9.99, you kind of need it. You kind of need the extra point. And I just think this, even this adds to what I think we are all kind of hinting at with Roger Goodell and the way the NFL is going right now. And that's why I brought up the fact that, according to this Harris poll, the NFL is by far and away the most popular sports league in the U.S. It is reaching across the world as well. There are people in the U.K. and across Europe and the world that are catching on to this game. And it's not because they don't like extra points or they don't want extra points. It's ridiculous. Our game, the most popular game in America now, is perfectly fine the way it is. You don't need to change where the kickoffs come from. You don't need to take out extra points to make the game more exciting. More exciting? Are you kidding me? It's the most popular sport in America, by far. It's not even close. I think this speaks to how greedy Roger Goodell and the NFL owners, if they vote for this, have become. We all knew that they were greedy, okay? We get it. But to change the game like this, taking out extra points, something that's been in the game since the beginning of the beginning of the game, since the beginning of time, was what I was going to say. It's just, I don't have words to describe it. And a few weeks ago, I want to bring up one more point on this. A few weeks ago on FN Radio, Todd DeFries had a really good point, I thought. And I didn't think of it much at the time, but he made this point that the NFL better be careful. Better be careful with how far it goes with spreading the game to different countries and spreading it on different nights of the week and changing these rules. Yeah, some of it's for safety, but the extra point's not for safety. That's the other thing. He's trying to play it off as if the extra point is a dangerous play. It's not a dangerous play. It's part of the game, just like getting sacked is part of the game. But back to Todd's point. The NFL better be careful how far it spreads itself out, because at a certain point, the NFL will get too big. It will try to do too much too quickly and change too much, and it will turn fans off. It will. And that popularity thing that I said at the beginning of this segment will start to get a little bit closer. I think the NFL could fall a little bit back if they continue to make these drastic changes to the game. We'll see. Come back in 10 years. Hopefully we still have this show. And we'll see where the NFL stands with the other games, the other leagues. The way it's going, I don't think it's going to increase. It could definitely come back to earth where the other games are. And I wish we had more time for me to really explain why I think taking out the extra point is kind of similar to playing games in Europe and playing on Thursday night and such. And I don't want to say I'm completely against playing in the UK and completely against playing on Thursday. I'm not. I like the UK game. I don't think there should be a franchise there, but I like the idea of playing a couple games there, mostly because I love the city of London. And Thursday night games, although there could be some changes, maybe buys before the Thursday night game, so we can actually have the teams ready to play and wanting to play rather than getting ready in 2 days. That, I think, would help a lot. Those are the changes that he should make. Not taking out extra points. So I wish there was more time for me to really explain why I think extra points is really similar to Thursday night games, but just real briefly, one of the reasons why the NFL has become so popular, fantasy football, I think, is a big thing. But another thing is it's on 1 day of the week. 1 day of the week, 1 day of the weekend, for 16, 17 straight weeks in the fall, mostly men, but Americans in general can say, I can put aside this entire day for the sport that I love. That's why it's popular. And a lot of other things contribute to that, like fantasy football. It's the most exciting sport to watch on TV, so it's great to watch in bars. It's great to watch at home. It's great to watch with DirecTV. You get all the games. That has caused the game to skyrocket in popularity. But if the NFL begins to make itself like basketball and baseball, where it's on every day, and you don't really set aside one whole day just for the NFL. Oh, now you have to set aside Monday nights, which, I mean, that's been around for 40 years. But now we have to set aside Thursday nights for really big NFL fans. Now you're talking about two nights a week and one entire day a week. You mix in Wednesday games or Thursday games. I have no idea if they're going to do that or thinking about it, but I bet Goodell's thinking about it. Thursday games. Oh, let's do Saturday games when there's no college at the end of December. There becomes a point where there's too much of a product. I never took economics, but it's simple supply and demand. If there's less supply, if there's less NFL games, then there's going to be higher demand. And the NFL is trying to feed that demand, which makes sense. They're trying to make more money. Demand to feed the UK fans, demand to feed More fans on Thursday. Fans on Wednesday. Fans on Saturday. But there's going to be a certain point where some fans, maybe not all fans, but some fans are going to say, too much. I can't handle it. And it will become like the NBA, where I don't know how you are, but sometimes with the NBA or NHL, you get caught up in your life, you know, work, whatever is going on, and you don't check on the NHL standings for a couple of days. And then all of a sudden, oh, no, I missed my team's game on Wednesday night. It's now Thursday. Oh, when do they play next? Sunday. Okay, I got to remember that. Weekend goes through. It's Sunday night. Oh, no, when's my hockey team play? Oh, they played today. I missed it. That happens to me a lot. I don't know if that happens to other NHL or NBA fans, but that happens to me a lot. And I think it would be a huge hit to the NFL popularity if that starts happening to the NFL. I mean, they still have the advantage of having less games, so you have less to remember. It's harder to remember 82 games in the NHL or NBA, and baseball there's even more, although baseball is easy to remember. They play every day. If you start having these random schedules in the NFL, even with 16 games, oh, does my team play Tuesday this week or Saturday? Or is it Thursday? Maybe it's Sunday. Well, what time is Sunday? 1 o'clock? 4 o'clock? 8 o'clock? I think the NFL should stay away, far, far away from that. But anyway, we're on a big tangent now. My moral of the story, leave the extra point in the game, please, Roger Goodell. My second statement here, no, actually, I'm not sure if I'm going to make this one into a statement as well, but second debate with the five worst Super Bowls in, I'm sorry, not the five worst teams in the Super Bowl, actually five worst teams to win the Super Bowl. There we go, I got it right that time. There have been two different articles entitled that on Football Nation, and one of them written by my co-host at MTR Radio. I encourage you to check out Tom and I's show on Wednesday and Friday evenings at 7 o'clock Eastern Time, 6 o'clock Central Time. But one of his articles, that's Tom Pollan, he rated the top five worst Super Bowl teams, and his actually came out before the other one, so he had some crossover with the other list. On both lists, the other one written by Gareth Brown, who's another young, well, I don't know how old he is, but a new writer on Football Nation, and he makes good stuff. And he's actually a UK fan, so yeah, the last part, well, my last rant was relevant to him. There was some crossover between the two lists, actually two teams, and both of them were the recent ones. The 2011 New York Giants and the 2012 Baltimore Ravens were on both of these guys' lists. So I'll make that my statement. Should the Giants of 2011 and the 2012 Ravens should are one of the five worst Super Bowl winning teams? I would say yes, they are. I would agree with that. And the other teams that I had a problem with were the other guys on their list. And no offense to your list, Gareth, but I would lean towards Tom's list, just agreeing with it more. Tom has some teams that I probably wouldn't put on it either. I think the one that I agree with Tom, though, which I think probably for me makes Tom's list better than Gareth's, is the 1980 Raiders. I really believe that might be the worst Super Bowl team ever. And again, you kind of hate debating this because these are all Super Bowl winning teams. They all won the big game and did a tremendous job of getting to the big game. And I think that was the 1980 Raiders. They were the first wild card team to win the whole thing. They were the first team to win four games, to win three games to get to the Super Bowl and then win the Super Bowl. They were the first team to do it all on the road. So they were the first for a lot of things. And but just when you look back at who was on that team, there were some Hall of Fame players, but overall it just wasn't one of the more dominating teams that the NFL has ever seen. So I would put them on that list, even though they played very well in that Super Bowl, beating Philadelphia Eagles 27-10. Now, two other teams that I would put on the list, New York Giant fans are going to be upset at me, but I would probably put the 07 Giants on the list as well. And again, you almost hate having a list like this because you're insulting a team that won the whole thing, but the two, both Giants teams in the last 5 years just weren't that impressive. They weren't extremely dominating teams. Again, Eli got it done when he needed to. Won Super Bowl MVP, was a tremendous quarterback in those Super Bowls. But in terms of the history of the game, if in a hypothetical world, if we could have a tournament with all of the Super Bowl teams, I really think that both Giants teams would finish in the bottom five. And for my last spot among the bottom five, I would go with one of the following two teams: the 1970 Colts and the 1987 Redskins. Now, the Colts were 11-2-1 in 1970, so a pretty good record. They had home field advantage. But one thing that most people will probably overlook is they had just switched from the NFL to the old AFL and the AFC. So they were supposed to cakewalk through the weaker, quote-unquote, weaker schedule, and they didn't. They really struggled. So kind of a hangover still of the loss at Super Bowl III, but they never really dominated the league like they did in 1968, and maybe that's kind of why they make my list. And the 1987 Redskins, it was a strike year. I think you could even argue that the 1982 Redskins could be up there for consideration of five worst Super Bowl teams. I don't think it's a coincidence that Joe Gibbs won both Super Bowls in strike-shortened years. I think he was a tremendous coach, getting the most out of his players, the players that he had, and other coaches weren't able to do that. So even though they were, I believe, 8-1 in 1982 and then 11-4 in 1987, I think both those teams are possible at being in the bottom five. In 87, they were the 3 seed. They actually got to have the home field advantage for the NFC Championship because in that year, the 1 seed and 2 seeds lost, the Redskins beating the Chicago Bears, the 2 seed in Chicago. So it was kind of a weird year that the top seeds all lost and the Redskins kind of, you know, cakewalked to the Super Bowl and blew out the Denver Broncos, who, I mean, at that time, the AFC was kind of an inferior conference. So there you go. I gave you actually 7 teams to consider with only 5 spots in the bottom 5 worst teams to win a Super Bowl. So it's time to take a break. Here's another song from U2, and then we're going to come back and wrap up today's show, which includes making a Super Bowl prediction. Here on Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle, your host, Dave Holcomb. I want to hear what you think about the show and also your opinions on what I debated today, extra point stuff. Who are your 5 worst Super Bowl winning teams? Tweet at me, DM, HOLCOMB. You can also email me, HolcombMDavid@gmail.com. And also find me on Facebook, Dave's Football News. So I didn't get you out of early today. Get you out of the show here early today because I kind of ranted there in our 4th and long segment. I hope you enjoyed it, though. I want to encourage you again, go check out Tom Pollen and Gareth Brown's articles on the 5 worst Super Bowl winning teams. Check out Cooper Allen's stuff. As for me, I've been trying to make and release a lot of stuff on Super Bowl history and where the teams that are in the Super Bowl this year, the Broncos and Seahawks, where they stand among other Super Bowl participants. So go check out my stuff as well. This week I had a top five greatest NFL defenses since 2000 piece. Also another one, top five greatest NFL offenses since 2000. And I'll give you a little hint. The Seahawks and Broncos from 2013 are on both lists. So that was fun comparing them to some of the great units on offense and defense that I've seen since the turn of the millennium. Another piece that I had come out on Friday, the top 10 coolest nicknames for defenses in NFL history. Legion of Boom, you know, a pretty cool nickname if you think about it. Not a ton of nicknames in today's NFL, so that's kind of rare. But where does that stack up among, you know, the no-name defense or Orange Crush or the Steel Curtain? Where does it land among all of those other great defensive nicknames? Check out that article as well. Last thing for today, my Super Bowl prediction. How can I not go with who I had in the preseason? The Seattle Seahawks. They've made it this far. I got the Super Bowl prediction correct. I know I'm bragging again, but hey, this doesn't happen a lot to me. I got the Seahawks and Broncos into the playoffs, number one seeds. They were the favorites going in. I picked them at the beginning of the playoffs. I picked them at the beginning of the season. So I'm staying with the Seahawks to win it. But actually, in all seriousness, I really do believe the Seahawks are going to win this game. I think they're going to be too much for Denver to handle. I know people are kind of saying that the Broncos are going to have too much firepower, too much offense for the Seahawks. You know what? Defenses still win championships, and I know that's a cliche that's going to probably come back and bite me, as some fans are going to write in and say that that's not true, blah, blah, blah. Well, yes, of course, you still need a great quarterback to win, but in games where great defenses play great offenses, it's almost always the defense that comes out on top. So I'm going with the defense. I know it's a new era. I know it's a passing league. But I really believe the Seahawks, who stopped the pass so well, they're going to win Super Bowl 48. One episode left after today. Next week, don't forget, after the Super Bowl, Monday morning, we will be here with the last episode of Monday Morning Huddle for Season 2. We'll wrap up the entire Super Bowl, and we're hoping actually to bring on Tom Pollen. He broke down the Super Bowl with me last year, so hopefully he can come on again, and that'll be really fun, and we'll just wrap up the entire NFL season, really, and let you know when we'll be back, hopefully for Season 3, but we'll get into all those details next week, so look out for that episode the day after the Super Bowl. Until then, I'm going to go and try and find some peace in my mind. It's true.